very good day to you all. Welcome back to Marca.com's Eye on the Liga Football podcast that is all things Spanish football. What a thrilling week of action we've had in the Europa League and the Champions League over the last few days. Atletico Madrid made it close and squeaky bum time for Los Blancos at a couple of points during their second leg of their Champions League semi-final at the Vicente Calderon, but it was all a bit too far for Simeone's side, knocked out as Los Blancos go ahead and get set to meet Juventus in the Champions League final. And of course, frustration for Celta Vigo on their travel to Manchester as they were defeated on aggregate by the Red Devils, miss out on their first Europa League final. And there's a huge weekend of La Liga action coming your way, as well as Sevilla travel to the Bernabeu to take on Real Madrid. Could be a banana skin for Zidane's side in their hopes to try and capture a La Liga crown once again, as Barcelona wait for Los Blancos to slip up and perhaps hand them the title. All of that on the show today. I'm your host, Ollie Wilson, and of course, two of the finest minds that Marca.com/EN has to offer on the show today. First and foremost, the man from Scotland himself, Mr. Ewan McTeer. How are you doing, Ewan?
Yeah, very good. Smiling as always.
Good. Glad to hear. A few teething problems today, but we are getting through and pushing through with the technical errors. So glad to finally have Ewan and be able to hear his voice on the show. Another man who's joining alongside Ewan as another expert of all things Spanish football, Mr. Simon Harrison, back once again after appearing already on the podcast this week. And a man who I noticed has his own brand logo on his emails as we ping around podcast ideas during the week. Simon, like, what's going on with this brand Simon Harrison thing?
Well, you see, you know, if you're aspiring to, you know, reach the top, you've got your CR7s. I mean, why not have your SH football?
SH football, love it. Absolutely love it. Are we going to see Adidas and Nike kind of squabbling it out then for you to be their first journalist on the books of one of these big sporting brands?
Well, if any of them are listening to this, I'll send my address in a heartbeat if there's any free merchandise going.
I think there's one thing that goes down in pretty much every single profession, and that's kind of free stuff. If there's anything available for free at any sort of event or anything like that, you can always guarantee that plenty of the journalists are going to be the people that start dipping their hands in and seeing like what free swag they can get away. But I'm sure you can contact Simon on Simon H Football on Twitter if anybody is interested in signing him up. All right, boys, let's jump straight into the Champions League action, because we said earlier in the week that Atletico Madrid had no chance on Wednesday night of turning this game around. Real Madrid looked far too strong in the first leg, a 3-0 lead after, of course, Cristiano Ronaldo's hat-trick. And it got a little tense, didn't it, in the Calderon? The evening certainly lived up to a kind of a grandstand last visit of Real Madrid to the old Classic Stadium. They were even tearing the seats out before full-time, and they've still got a game to go in that ground as well. And they didn't half give a really good go putting the wind up Real Madrid and making it nervy for them. What went wrong in terms of Atletico not being able to finish the job after going 2-0 up inside 16 minutes?
Well, I think Karim Benzema went wrong for them. Until that point, everything was going swimmingly for Atletico. They got their two goals probably quicker than they even imagined. I think if they got to half-time with one of the goals pulled back, then they'd have been content with that. But to have taken already two of the goals back and be fully on track, you know, you've got another hour or so to get one more goal, and then towards the end of the half, it sort of, they lost a bit of control, and then Benzema did his shimmy towards the goal, taking three players out at once. One of those true Champions League moments of magic, and Isco popped up to finish it off, and at that point it was back to square one. They needed another three goals, and you just felt that was their chance gone.
A moment of magic, Ewan, but like at the same time, for Atleti's defence to allow that to happen, because immediately when Godin, for instance, came across to help support the defensive effort of keeping Benzema pinned in the corner, and he was the second body on the scene of three that he ended up going around the Real Madrid centre forward, the angle of approach, Godin was covering the wrong side. He wasn't playing goal side. He was covering Benzema's kind of track back up, back towards his own half, back up the sideline. And the only way that Benzema could go was down towards the byline. But they left an almighty gap there, that Atletico defence.
Yeah, I mean, I find that the most confusing thing, the worst decision probably of the entire Champions League this season. I mean, Godin, initially I thought from the angle that I'd watched it from, I thought that he was trying to cut out a pass from going back to Marcelo, which, you know, it definitely isn't, you know, the most pressing concern in that scenario. But then it became clear that obviously Jimenez, he'd been taken out initially, and he was covering that pass anyway. So it made no sense for Diego Godin to go on the wrong side of Savic. I don't think Savic had really checked his shoulders, so I'm sure he would have probably assumed that Godin would have just, you know, tucked in behind, and then Savic suddenly got caught quite flat-footed. Saul and Godin tried to, you know, make up for, well, Godin being massively out of position, as you said. And I have got no idea how he managed to shimmy his way through. Zidane didn't have any idea, and Benzema didn't have any idea. So it was definitely a moment of inspiration from somewhere.
It was almost fitting that Isco, who I think plenty of people felt a little hard done by in terms of the last few weeks, in terms of his getting into this team, was the man to tuck away the goal that downed Atletico Madrid, and the presence of mind to dink it over Oblak after he made arguably one of the best saves that you'll see with the initial effort that came through. For Atletico, though, now, there are a lot of questions that will come up out of this game, not just about, of course, Benzema's ability to get down towards the byline, but also then, you know, what was this season really for? Because they were, and we keep saying it on this podcast throughout the season, they were built up to be perhaps able to contend on all three fronts in terms of the Copa del Rey, La Liga title, and, of course, the Champions League. It all came down to one, and even then they fell short once again. We've spoken about the lack of perhaps support for Griezmann with a consistent forward alongside him to really help pick up the flak in terms of scoring. Where has Atletico's season slipped away and gone wrong? And why hasn't it been as successful perhaps as other seasons have been in the last few years? Or has it been as successful?
Well, it's not been as successful as the last few years, but at the same time, I think we have to keep in mind just where Atletico were 5 years ago before Simeone came along. And as he kind of put it, you know, this was you know, a failure in the sense that they didn't get any trophies at the end of it. But again, for Atletico to be competing in three tournaments, and although they fell away in the league, you know, they won't finish all that far behind compared to their recent history, and they'll guarantee third place again. And then they took Barcelona close in the Copa del Rey, they've taken Real Madrid close in the Champions League, and they've sort of finished where they probably should, which is, you know, a little bit behind Barcelona and Real Madrid in all the competitions. In a way, you've got to look at that as a success, but at the same time, you have to consider that a failure because there's no silverware for it, and you worry just how much longer the likes of Antoine Griezmann, who's still only got one Spanish Super Cup medal to his name in his whole career, you have to wonder how long some of these players are going to wait around being content with a pat on the back and a runners-up medal or a semi-final berth.
Yeah, I imagine it's quite a bruising pat on the back from Simeone as well. So what changes in the next few weeks then, Ewan, in terms of the futures of... do you think this becomes... Because a lot of people might have said that Griezmann, had he won the Champions League, would then have gone because he'd been successful, brought a major trophy to Atletico Madrid and then left. Other people would say that the fact that they've fallen short means that he'll be off because he wants to get those medals. As you say, which do you think is more likely for Griezmann?
Yeah, I think the latter's probably more likely. If he had won the Champions League with Atletico, then you're with the current reigning European champions. There's nowhere better to go, really. You've got a UEFA Super Cup coming up. You've got a Club World Cup coming up. I think if they'd won it, that would be all the more reason to stay. But having lost it, and, you know, once again losing to Cristiano Ronaldo, which he's done in the past year with one other Champions League final, a Euro 2016 final, and now this game here, you sort of feel just the way it happened again, and we sort of said this before, this tie was, you know, could there be another cruel way for Atletico to lose to Real Madrid after a last-minute Ramos equaliser, penalties? And I think this was probably it, you know, the last European game at the Calderon, to sort of be almost deceived into thinking a comeback was possible, and then for even that to be taken away was almost as cruel as the previous two. And you just wonder how hard that'll have hit Griezmann, sort of seeing just how far short they were of Real Madrid. And with Simeone, I think his comments after the match sort of suggested that he's still in this for at least the short term, and maybe even the medium term, the way he was talking about aspiring to eventually catch up with Real Madrid and Barcelona in the long term. He said, you know, this half comeback attempt was one small step in this game, but was a giant step for Atletico in terms of matching Real Madrid and Barcelona. So he still seems to be thinking long term. But whether Griezmann will keep that approach, that remains to be seen.
Simon, what about the anybody else in this Atletico side that might be looking to depart and get away? Because, I mean, for instance, the likes of Diego Godin, Oblak, of course, plenty of people would love to have him between the posts at their side. Yannick Carrasco's only really just joined the club, but and perhaps not shown exactly what Atletico Madrid fans wanted. But there's such quality still running through this side that, I mean, if it all stays together, you'd argue they could possibly mount another La Liga title challenge next season and do what they were expected to do this year, but could easily get picked apart suddenly.
Yeah, I mean, they've obviously got a lot of players that are playing at a high level. Earlier in the season, it wasn't really happening. They had quite a few injury problems. I think one big miss has been Augusto, who's been out for pretty much the entire season. He would be a nice little complementary addition to that central midfield. I think really they should be looking to add to what they have rather than looking to sell up. I think quite a lot of their players would get a premium price. But I think a lot of it would kind of depend on what happens in the European transfer market elsewhere. If big teams need to replace certain players, then maybe, you know, that's when you start to see it. I don't think that any Atletico player would necessarily be already thinking about the possibility of moving, because this season, earlier on, they had injuries, they're a bit unfortunate, but I think they've kind of turned it around and they're in a position now where they can be looking excitedly at next season rather than thinking how things have petered out for them in the Champions League and finishing third. I think the way that Simeone's kind of dealt with it in the press and just in general, I think he's kind of lifted the mood a little bit. I think earlier on, maybe people could think that Atletico were looking a little bit jaded. Maybe the same could be said of Simeone. And in that first leg as well, that really didn't seem like a Simeone side, but they turned it around, they fought back, and I think as long as they keep Griezmann, there's been a lot of talk about Lacazette being a possible signing to, you know, partner him up front, give them something that they're missing. If they have another striker that can contribute as much as Griezmann has managed to this season, then they're going to be a massive force to contend with as long as they can keep everyone fit.
What about the viewpoint from the other side of Madrid then, the other half of the city celebrating, of course, another Champions League final as well on the cards for them? Juventus will be a very tough task indeed. Will this game in particular have just sent another little shockwave through Zidane's squad and through Zidane in general about, you know, nothing is done and dusted yet in terms of the La Liga title race nor the Champions League? Almost did feel like it was slipping away from them at one point at the Vicente Calderon, and perhaps it might be the kick in the behind that they need just to refocus going into the last few games of the season. Not that they ever really needed to anyway.
Well, Casemiro and some of the players kind of, the way they were speaking, they kind of said that they didn't feel any fear. They were never worried. They were always confident. But I mean, for me, it didn't really come across that way on the pitch. I mean, they really struggled to find any kind of control for the first 20 minutes or so. I think one thing which will be quite important as well is that Danilo really did not look comfortable against Atletico. And obviously against Juventus, you've got a team who play with really adventurous wingbacks. So he's going to be asked a lot of questions defensively. I think with Dani Carvajal being injured and then with Marcelo potentially needing to be a bit more reserved in order to cope with Dani Alves and what he's going to get up to down the right-hand side for Juve. I mean, the fullbacks have been two really, really important pieces of the puzzle for Zidane this season. They've created a lot and they give the natural width in the attack. And the fact that when you're playing up against the Bianconeri, your fullbacks may need to actually be a bit more reserved. So then it puts a lot more focus on Isco, on Ronaldo, on Benzema to do the bulk of the creating up top.
Sorry, you sounded like you wanted to jump into on this as well.
No, I was going to say exactly what Simon beat me to it, which was a sort of vibe. great minds think alike. That point of the Real Madrid players after the match just expressing that confidence of they never really felt that that they were scared of losing this tie. But again, like Simon said, they sort of showed that a little bit on the pitch. And I think, you know, that's the right thing to say to the press to maintain that confidence. But I think afterwards they will, like you said, Ollie, that loss on the night will have sort of reminded them that, you know, the Champions League isn't won and La Liga certainly isn't won.
Is it any consolation at all for the fans of Atletico Madrid to have at least won the last, in over 90 minutes, the last Madrid derby at the Calderon, last one on this on the Champions League semi-final before we look at Celta Vigo? But yeah, is it any consolation at all? We saw the seats being ripped out and it did very much feel like the goodbye that the Calderon is going to eventually have anyway, but it was like it had come a game early because of the impact of the Isco goal, because of the frustration of going out to Madrid, but still getting a victory against the old City rivals.
I really think it did, and you know, even if Real Madrid had brought it back to 2-2 on the night, I think not so much the win on the night was important for Atletico, but I think the way they started the game, the way they showed that, you know, okay, it didn't work out in the end, but the comeback really was possible. Simeone was saying that, you know, all the pre-match talk, and there was so much talk from Atletico about their values and even the Tifo before the game, and where they were talking about how they were proud not to be like Real Madrid in response to Real Madrid's question last week of how do you feel. I think that really, you know, sort of made Atletico feel proud again of their team. You know, although they might have lost, they went out, you know, kicking and screaming a little bit, and that was something to be proud of, even if, you know, they didn't get what they really hoped they would this time, which was a Cardiff win. So they sent the Calderon off in a positive way. They'll surely be hoping to beat Athletic Club in the final league game, because they won't want Isco to go down as a final player to have scored, although they will also then be hoping for a goalless Copa del Rey final, but you never know. So yeah, I think for Atletico fans this was a good way to sort of send the Calderon off, and the way they were just sort of singing through the rain at the end with, you know, the heavens opening up, it felt all the more iconic, I think.
Yeah, the goodbye under the floodlights, and we will say goodbye to part one of the podcast. When we come back after a very quick break, we're going to look at the Europa League semi-final at Old Trafford between Manchester United and Celta Vigo. So close, but not close enough. And there will maybe some finger-pointing at one centre-forward who let his side down. We'll come back in just a break here on Eye on the League. Marca in English's podcast that's all things Spanish football, Eye on the Liga. Ewan McTair at E McTair, and Simon Harrison at Simon H Football. The brand keeps getting bigger on Twitter for Simon Harrison joining me on the show today. Gentlemen, let's talk about the Europa League semi-final then at Old Trafford between Manchester United and Celta Vigo. Fellaini scores after 17 minutes, gets really neat ball in from Marcus Rashford, gets in behind the defence and able to nod United in front, and it seemed like that was kind of going to be cruise control for the Red Devils, but Roncaglia pulling one back, and suddenly Celta Vigo with within a goal once again of being able to put themselves into a Europa League final. Came close right at the end, a centre forward who squandered so many chances, John Guidetti. There will be a fair few fingers pointing at him and saying what on earth went wrong in front of goal last night at Old Trafford.
Yeah, I think it was a shame, obviously, because it had been built up to almost be Guidetti's moment. He would be playing in a final in Stockholm, where he was born. It was very much, yeah, the script was already written with him being the hero for it, really. But it didn't work out that way. I think the chance, the ball just came at him so quickly. I think it was in the fifth, sixth minute of stoppage time. The ball came at him so quickly that it made it quite hard to bring it under control from such close range. And obviously, you've got to take into account the fact that Claudio Bavu, he somehow showed this, you know, this ice-cold composure to cut the ball back perfectly to the back post. And I'm not sure Guidetti would have even expected that. He might have expected the substitute to, you know, go for goal. It was quite a tight angle. But maybe you'd ask Romero to parry it out and then he can react accordingly. But he was asked to react immediately to something that perhaps, you know, he wasn't necessarily expecting to come his way. I think it is harsh to point the fingers solely at Guidetti. I think you can look at Iago Aspas and think, did he quite deliver what people would have expected from him? And also, as even though Sergio Alvarez made a lot of good saves across the tie, and arguably, you know, prevented more goals than he caused, I think with Rashford's free kick and also with that Fellaini header, you do wonder whether both times he's got close, but there's been little bits of mispositioning or maybe a stronger wrist. And then maybe you're looking at having kept a clean sheet in the first leg and even not conceding the second leg. So it's always going to be the case when you get to the final stages of these kind of tournaments that these sort of little fine details can have the biggest of implications.
Well, it wasn't as bad as Keylor Navas's attempt on Wednesday night to keep out Griezmann's penalty, which was just atrocious. But yeah, Sergio Alvarez not exactly covering himself in glory with Fellaini. He said it might be a bit harsh to blame that on the goalkeeper, considering Fellaini did get a clean run on goal and an expert ball in from Rashford. And I say that as a man who does not support Manchester United in any way, shape or form. Also for Guidetti, in terms of former Manchester City man as well, wanting to score to put United out of the Europa League, would have been a very interesting storyline running through that too. Interesting, you called it cool, calm, composure by Bovu in terms of laying that across to Guidetti. Ewan, is there a case of saying that the substitute lack of playing time, lack of confidence in front of goal, because he's not scored many this season, actually just bottled it? Because it seemed like there was a big open space at one point at Romero's near side to smash it in at the near post. Or, as Simon said, you go across goal against the keeper and force him to parry it out and have, you know, you've got two players then perhaps able to get in there and react to anything that the keeper fumbles. I mean, not a smart move, it felt, from the substitute to lay it across goal in the pretty much the last kick of the game.
Yeah, I mean, like, as we were saying, it was all written for Guidetti to be the hero, but you think, you know, there were 10 other players on that Celta Vigo team who, you know, surely wanted to be just as much of a hero for their team no matter where they were born. So when he was through on goal, you sort of felt that it was written for him. And yeah, that might be a case of he wasn't quite sure, wasn't quite confident in himself to finish that chance and pass it. And that was almost a repeated pattern throughout the game. Was quite often Celta Vigo had the ball round about the Manchester United area, and they were sort of just passing it around and sort of never really wanting to take a risk with firing across into the box or taking a shot. And quite often, and Aspas I think was guilty of this as well, was laying the ball off to someone else and just sort of maybe taking the easy pass or taking a pass instead of a shot too often when there were, you know, a couple of openings. And that final chance sort of just summed that up in one moment. And yeah, I guess, you know, can't blame Guidetti too much, I guess, because you know, players miss that kind of chance all the time. It was a difficult one, but when it's the final, one of the final kicks to send your team into a European final, everybody's going to pour over it. Well, until the next time you get a moment as big as that.
God, you both are very, very kind, both to the players and in general to Celta Vigo. I mean, considering as well, they've put all their eggs in their Europa League basket, if you will, this season. They've been sacrificing league games, which has kind of rung true in terms of the form that they've been in. Haven't won in, what, 2 months now? Or a month and a half, I think it is now, for Celta Vigo. In the last few outings, the draw against Genk, the straight losses in the league, five of them, and then, of course, the draw last night. It's not been pretty reading in terms of the form table. Does Berizzo now take some responsibility for the La Liga campaign? Because if it pays off and they get through to the Europa League final, you know, he's a hero. It's great news for them. It's great news for the club. You know, perhaps a chance to play in the Champions League next year and also have some silverware. But the fact that they've fallen short and sacrificed the league campaign so much this season because of that European campaign that they're making a big push for, Berizzo suddenly doesn't look too smart as a manager who's rested a lot of his players and been happy to almost sacrifice league games for the Thursday night football.
Well, I mean, you look at where Celta Vigo were at the start of the season, and they looked like a team that were even worried about going down at one point, really, in the embryonic stages. And they managed to fight their way out of that funk, obviously doing very well alongside in Europe. And they sort of climbed mid-table, you know, that they're generally been between, since I'd say the turn of the year, they've generally been between about 10th, 12th, that kind of area, just consistently. And yes, of course, that's not where Celta Vigo see themselves as being, but there have been a lot of exciting teams that have been going for Europa League football this year. And the fact is that it's been true in the Premier League, when you've got the teams who are, you know, they're gunning for certain objectives, and that's their only focus. I mean, they can spread their resources a lot more thinly. They can rely on their first choice 11s as much as possible. And I think when you look at Celta Vigo and you look at the fact that at the start of the season they were in terrible, terrible form, I think the only really logical thing that Barizzo could do is think that we're just not good enough this year to go for both. we're probably not going to be able to, you know, catch the likes of Real Sociedad. We're probably not going to catch the likes of Athletic Club, who always seem to, you know, pull the European finish out of the bag in the last stretch of the season. So for him, I mean, maybe even though you'd be going up against some very good teams, and I mean, Celta knocked out some very good teams to get to the semi-final, maybe it made more sense to do that. And it's a big decision, which is made all the easier when you've got Barrizo probably going to be leaving the club at the end of the year too, because he doesn't have to think beyond the summer.
Is there an element of frustration for Spanish football in general as well? I mean, it's not too often that we see a Europa League final without a Spanish representative. It's only happened twice since the 2008-09 season, when Shakhtar Donetsk met Werder Bremen in the final. Since then, only 2010-11 and 2012-13 finals have been absent of any La Liga side playing in it. I mean, it's a trophy that Spanish football takes very seriously, and it will be a bit frustrating for Spanish football in general, perhaps, that there is no representative now.
Well, I mean, this was another opportunity to potentially have five Champions League teams next season, because if Celta Vigo had won it, obviously they were qualifying for Europe anyway. So in a way, it's not just a disappointment for this season, but it means there's one less Spanish team to follow next year, because Celta Vigo have lost out in that place. And it was, you know, Villarreal obviously didn't make it through, but at the start of this season, with Celta, with Sevilla even having won the Europa League and benefited from this bonus Champions League qualifying spot, it was quite exciting, the prospect of having five Spanish teams to follow in the Champions League season.
And frustration for you, Ewan, as well. I'm sure that, you know, there's no chance of Eibar being able to make it into those European spots
that
next year.
And carry on. That is true.
Just finally then on for Celta Vigo, in terms of it now, as we touched on, it's slightly a drab, disappointing season, sat in 12th at the moment then, and to have not made it. Is it a chance at least to kind of wipe the slate clean this year for the remainder of the campaign, and then start afresh looking for next season? And the expectation, I'm sure, will be we have to get back to Europe once again.
It's going to be a tough one. I mean, the big decision that needs to be made is on the manager. Obviously, Barrizo, he earns a very good wage for his position as head coach. But with his contract running out, there's obviously a lot of talk that he might go to, you know, Sevilla, being, I think, the main job that he's linked with most. Marcelino's just been appointed as a Valencia manager, so that's no longer a possibility for him. But I think a lot of it does rest on who they go for as manager. If Barrizo stays on, then great, but I do feel like he will now feel, after getting to the semi-final and falling a bit short, he'll probably feel that if he wants to progress as a coach, even though he's got a history with the club, he's played for the club, it might be time now to move on. It's a natural time to progress. And then it very much lands in the lap of whoever's next as to what they can do with this group of players, because a lot of the teams around them have strengthened. And when I say around them, I mean teams with Europe League aspirations. And you've got the likes of Eibar, who a couple of years ago would have been dreaming of this, but now it's a realistic thing that they're going to be looking to go top eight. You've got Valencia appoint a new coach. They've got a massive budget. They're going to have a lot of pull factors to bring different players to the club in the summer. So now with Celta, I think the best thing they can hope for is to appoint the best possible candidate to replace Barrizo, and then take it from there, as well as definitely keeping hold of Iago Aspas.
Interesting what happens with Aspas, because it's always funny when a big player, obviously he's had a very good season, Iago Aspas, but kind of went to sleep and went silent in the big games in terms of the Europa League semi-finals, and really was off his game, as you touched on, Simon, on Thursday night. It's always frustrating when you get a guy that is so good for so much of the season and then just goes to sleep right when you think that this is his moment, perhaps, to pull something out of the bag. But that perhaps is me being too harsh once again on this Celta Vigo side, as I seem to have been, and you two are much kinder on them. We're going to leave Celta Vigo back behind us, along with their Europa League dreams. Sorry, Celta Vigo fans. And when we come back here on the show, we're going to have a quick look ahead to the La Liga weekend coming up, because there's a huge tie taking place in Madrid. It's Real Madrid host Sevilla. Sao Paulo could perhaps a nail in Madrid's La Liga title hopes. We will come back in just a moment here on Final La Liga.
Hey.
podcast, Ewan McTare and Simon Harrison joining me here on Eye on the Liga, and we move into the final part and look ahead to the weekend's games, the weekend's action. Of course, Spanish football gets a bit odd with its timings now. Only two games on the Saturday, everything else being played on the Sunday. And a lot of the games have been played at the same time as well, along with the following weekend, the final weekend of the season too, in terms of everything kicking off at around about 3:15, I think it is, on the final weekend, except for Barcelona and Real Madrid's games that will kick off at 7 o'clock. They know how to work the TV revenue, don't they, in Spanish football, and keep the audiences tuning into the big games. Massive, massive game. As Real Madrid take on Sevilla at the Bernabeu, as if the week didn't get tougher for Zidane, with being stressed and stretched in the 2-1 loss at the Vicente Calderon, but booking their place in the Champions League final. Now they have to get back to domestic measures once again. 84 points apiece for Barcelona and Real Madrid at the top of the La Liga table, with Madrid with that game in hand taking on Celta Vigo next week. But does Sampaoli go to the Bernabeu and cause a massive headache for Zidane, and a huge, huge opportunity for Barcelona? Ewan, let's kick things off with you.
I have a feeling he's going to cause him a minor headache, and this one might finish in a draw, which would be enough for Real Madrid to still win the league if they win the remaining matches. I think Sevilla have shown that they can make it tough for Real Madrid in the Copa del Rey game and the league game, both the ones at the Sanchez Pizjuan. Interestingly, when they went to the Bernabeu, they were quite poor, and they were soundly beaten, and you wonder if that's the kind of Sevilla we'll see this weekend. But they still have plenty to play for, and they need one more point to secure their Champions League qualification. So this Sevilla team isn't going to be on the beach at this point in the season, but they do have a bit of a mini injury crisis, and Real Madrid potentially missing Varane, missing Carvajal and Bale. That, on paper sounds quite bad, but I think Sevilla's injury report is a little bit worse, and at this stage in the season, quite often that's what decides these big games. So I think Sevilla will cause Madrid problems, and they could nick a draw, but for Sevilla to go to the Bernabeu and win the game, which is what Barcelona really need, I still see that as unrealistic.
Who's going to be the biggest loss for Sevilla in terms of this injury crisis? There's a few out. Mariano, Ibora unlikely to be able to play on the weekend. Sanabria's out through suspension, of course. Vitolo trying to get back to the starting 11. Who's the big absentee that could be really tough for Sampaoli's starting 11 headaches?
I think, for me, looking at that, I think if Mariano isn't fit for the game, that's going to be quite a tough one, because there's not really a natural replacement for him. Normally, you might think that Sampaoli could always go with Pablo Sarabia playing in more of a wing back sort of role, but he's out with suspension, so it's quite a tough one. I mean, you'd probably be looking at playing someone like Gabriel Mercado potentially at right back, but I think he's quite limited and he's not going to give you the same driving force in attack. So if I was Sampaoli, I mean, That would be the big problem area, but at least they can fall back on the fact that Real Madrid have got the same issue in that, do they play Danilo, who was poor against Atletico Madrid, or do they go with Nacho, who has been solid all season, but he doesn't really offer that much going forward down the right-hand side on probably what he would consider to be his weaker foot.
Sevilla's been a side that have been kind of tricky to nail down at points this year, but going into this game now, do you think they're really trying to put together, it seems, under Sampaoli, like a strong finish to this season? Because there were a lot of hopes and expectations that they could be the ones to jump into that three-way fight for a La Liga title at one point, especially in the first third of the year, you feel. And Sampaoli is a very poorly kept secret, if you will, that he's going to be the next Argentina coach, of course, and will be departing at the end of this year. He wants to kind of go out with a bang for Sevilla. This will be the biggest way to create that bang as well.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's a nice little footnote to put in your CV if you can pull off, a result that sticks in the memory against a team like Real Madrid. I think what they have got in their favour is the fact that earlier in the season, when Real Madrid travelled to the Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan and lost 2-1, that was actually a game where Zidane seemed to be a bit conscious of Sevilla. Obviously, they're in really good form. He chose to go with three at the back. He played with Varane, Sergio Ramos and Nacho as a back three, and then with Marcelo and Carvajal as wing-backs. And I really didn't think it worked too well in that game. It left Ronaldo and Benzema playing in like a front two, which didn't really seem to work. But at least it is a way of showing that, Zidane, he's potentially worried by this team. He's worried by their intensity, perhaps even their unpredictability is something which is really the biggest worry, because It has been a bit inconsistent from Sevilla since the turn of the year. Maybe they struggled with what Sampaoli's been asking from them with his methods and how he likes them to play. Obviously, it's hard to maintain that sort of performance level. But you do feel like in the last few games, Atletico Madrid have more or less sewn up that third spot. And this has been something which has been expected for the last few weeks. So you wonder whether all of these Sevilla players might be looking at this game and thinking, well, you know, we're not going to finish third. We're comfortable in fourth, but let's go and let's, you know, put a dent in Real Madrid's title hopes.
How does Zidane set this side up and his approach to this game then, in terms of, I guess, his desire to get on the front foot and press Sevilla early on and try and stamp out his authority on this game very quickly on home soil, and I mean, will it be an aggressive approach from Madrid, or slightly sit back and perhaps let Sevilla try and come onto them slightly?
Yeah, I have a feeling this one could be quite similar to the Valencia game. I mean, and Sevilla have sort of just been a slightly better Valencia this season, as in they've been almost just as inconsistent, but they have pulled off more wins than losses, obviously. And Valencia, when they came to the Bernabeu, they have obviously got a very talented squad. They had the potential to cause Real Madrid problems, and Real Madrid, they kind of scored that early goal, and then they did sit back a little bit once Ronaldo missed that penalty, and it almost seemed like they were kind of just hoping to play out and get that 1-0 win, and then obviously when they were pinned back, they had to go for it again and managed to do so. I wonder if Zidane will take confidence from the fact they were able to win that game, and the fact that they could sort of be a little bit patient with Sevilla and almost know that a draw almost takes him one hand onto the La Liga trophy, or if he'll be concerned by the way that Valencia game was too close for comfort, and if he'll want to kind of unleash all the attacking forces he has at his potential. And for this game, he definitely has more attacking talent available to him than defensive talent. So I definitely don't think we'll see that kind of back three with Carvajal out. Danilo just isn't really suited to play that role. I think we'll see a similar lineup to the one that he played in midweek, and if they can just sort of play as patiently as they did against Atletico and sort of go on the attack and nick one goal, I think I don't really see Sevilla managing to score a couple. So if Real Madrid can get one, then they've surely got their draw, and if Zidane's learned his lessons from the Clásico, then once you've got your draw in the final minute, don't send everybody charging forward. And if Leo Messi appears on the Sevilla attack, then just take him out. So,
Sampaoli's good, but I don't think even he could pull that one off in the last few minutes at the Bernabeu this weekend. What about Barcelona very quickly then on against Las Palmas on the road? I mean, this is a Barcelona side that have only got one goal in their mind at the moment, and that is to try and topple Real Madrid and make sure that they win out to ensure that it gives them a chance to do so. And Las Palmas, middle of the pack, aren't really going to cause a problem.
Well, their home form's been fairly good this year. I mean, you can look to last week and you can see that they were thrashed 5-0 by Atletico Madrid. But if you look at their other games, I mean, they've gone for long portions of the season unbeaten at home. The problem that I think they have is that their game sort of relies on control, it relies on possession, and for the majority of occasions when teams will come and visit Gran Canaria, they're better technically. They're going to be the team that controls the game, dictates the tempo, but when you've got Barcelona coming to town, and Las Palmas obviously are quite one-dimensional, they've only got this one plan, this plan A, this keep the ball, almost enjoy your football sort of philosophy under Quique Setién. But Barcelona can do that better than they can. So it is worrying to see how open this game will be. I mean, Barca, they are missing Sergio Roberto due to suspension. So that could see Hesse playing up against Javier Mascherano at right back. And that's going to give problems in itself. But generally, I think Barcelona will just be able to play Las Palmas at their own game. And it should be a comfortable win. But there have been some instances this season where Las Palmas have been absolutely brilliant. But I just wonder if their styles are too similar between the two teams, and that Barcelona will just be able to do what Las Palmas normally do, but just that little bit better.
I think you're being very generous to Las Palmas' chances attached, Simon, with that. I mean, Sergio Roberto missing at right back, is that really a problem for Barcelona, considering the problems that he has caused himself in that position this year?
Well, I mean, if you look at Mascherano, you're looking at a player who has mostly been played out of his favourite position for all of his career at Barcelona. And also, with playing at right-back, he's not quite the same athletic type that he might have been. Like, pace and power has never really been his you know, that's not what he brings to the table as such. And you're looking at, you've got Hesse, who he is extremely erratic, and you're never too sure what he's going to do once he gets into the box. But the fact of the matter is that he is just in a flat-out sprint. His acceleration's good. He's got good close control. He's quite a skillful player. Maybe that'll cause a few problems. And I mean, I do think that Las Palmas, they will probably lose this game by two or three goals because they just can't seem to shut up shop, no matter even if they wanted to. But I just think that's an important thing to just consider, that Barcelona, they might be a little bit unbalanced at the back.
Yeah, four losses in their last five outings for Las Palmas. I dare to say I'm not going to give them too much of a chance. Just very quickly, gentlemen, finally, on the Europa League battle and the race to try and get into fifth and sixth in the La Liga table. It's all very tight between Villarreal, Bilbao and Sociedad. Two spots, three teams, and another big interesting weekend with Sociedad taking on Malaga, Bilbao at home against Leganes, and Villarreal at home against Deportivo La Coruña. Interesting that all three are on home soil at the same time this week.
Yeah, this one has the makings of going 1 week further into the final week of the season. I think all three of them would be disappointed if they dropped any points in this one. I think Real Sociedad probably have the toughest game against Malaga, who have been, you know, in excellent form, and Michel has just won the Manager of the Month award. So they probably have the trickiest tie. But yeah, you'd expect all three of these teams to win this weekend and to take it into the final day, which if they do would be fascinating, with 1 point separating them all.
It could be a real thriller on the last day of the season in La Liga, and with all of those games, we'll be kicking off at about 3 o'clock on Sunday next week. Sorry, on 7 o'clock. Sorry, on Sunday next week. Right, let's leave it there for today, gentlemen. A big thanks to you both for helping us out on the show today, Mr. Ewan McTair, E McTair on Twitter. Always a pleasure to hear your tones from north of the border, mate.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't do an Iago Aspas and fall asleep just at the end of an excellent season.
Now you start getting horrible and nasty towards the Celta Vigo players. You leave me out on my own for 10 minutes and then put a knife in right at the end. Cheers, Ewan. Simon H Football on Twitter. Simon Harrison, big thanks as always. And good luck with the brand for the rest of the season as well, mate.
Yeah, well, you never know. I mean, the long-term dream's got to be setting up my own football club. So, you know, be sure to let me know if you want to get involved in any open trials for that.
If you need a commentator, an in-house commentator, mate, I'm always there to help out. No problem at all. Remember, you can get onto marker.com/EN and at Marker in English on Twitter. That's at Marker in English, all one word, capital letters on Marker and English, if you really want to be finickety about it. On the Facebook page as well, just search Marker in English. You'll find it there. Like, give a review of the podcast if you want there, or just ask some questions out about all things Spanish football. And I'm sure one of our fine writers will get back to you and have a chat with you. And of course, we'll be releasing all the latest and breaking news from around La Liga, particularly as the title race hots up again. So can Sevilla put a dent in Real Madrid's title hopes? Can Barcelona pounce on a misstep from Los Blancos? We will find out, and we'll be back on Monday to talk about it all and then build up to the big game of Celta Vigo taking on Real Madrid at home. Will they bounce back from their Europa League loss this weekend and then continue that into the vital game in hand that Madrid have over Barcelona? All that is in store in the next 10 to 12 days as the La Liga season wraps up, and we'll be following it all. Thanks very much for listening. We'll be back in a few days' time. Have a good weekend. Enjoy the football. Take care.